Good morning, I'm Debbie Cruz. It's Thursday, October 24th. Demolition of the fire damage at the Oceanside Pier is underway. More on that next, but first, let's do the headlines. The County Board of Supervisors earlier this week voted to audit their contract with Equa's Workforce Solutions. The company was hired to manage an emergency hotel voucher program for those displaced by the January floods. Flood victims have complained about the program's effectiveness, the quality of its service, and the security of their personal information. The audit will be presented to the board within 120 days. The state of California, the city of Encinitas, and a local condo group have agreed to pay more than $30 million to a family who lost three loved ones in a 2019 bluff collapse. Patrick Davis lost his wife, daughter, and sister-in-law in the collapse at Grandview Beach.
We wanted some accountability, mainly so that this wouldn't happen to someone else's family.
The family sued, alleging negligence. The lawsuit found a state geologist had previously warned about the risk of bluff failures at that location. The family also claimed city lifeguards failed to adequately protect beachgoers. In addition to the financial settlement, the city of Encinitas has also agreed to make policy changes to promote safety around bluffs. The changes include increased training for lifeguards and putting up additional signs warning about the risk of bluff failures. Local hospitals are reporting that injuries from border wall falls are up nearly 60% from last year. That's according to data from UCSD Health and Scripps Mercy. They are the only two hospitals in the area who treat the type of injuries people have after they fall from the border wall. So far this year, the two hospitals have seen nearly 1,000 patients who fell from the border wall. That's compared to nearly 630 for all of 2023. From KPBS, you're listening to San Diego News Now. Stay with me for more of the local news you need. Work is now underway at the Oceanside Pier to remove debris from a fire earlier this year. But North County reporter Tanya Thorne tells us the pier will still be open to visitors.
6 months after a fire started at the Oceanside Pier, demolition of the fire damage begins.
We're in the very early stages of demolition. We're taking down the heavy steel portion of the building. We're still installing the debris containment.
Brian Thomas, the city engineer for Oceanside, says once the steel beams of the old Ruby's Diner are removed, debris haul away will begin. In the coming weeks, trucks will begin to haul the debris from the pier, but it won't cause any closures, just added precautions.
So they'll have a spotter in front of the equipment, a spotter behind the equipment. So if you see vehicles moving, please step to one side, allow the vehicles to pass, and then continue with your day.
Crews are expected to finish the demo by the end of this year. Once that's done, staff will begin to prepare plans and apply for permits to rebuild. It could be 3 to 4 years before the Oceanside Pier is fully rebuilt and open to the public. Tanya Thorne, KPBS News.
By the end of this year, San Diego's expected to lose more than 600 shelter beds for people experiencing homelessness. San Diego Mayor Todd Gloria wants to address that by expanding the city's Safe Sleeping Site program. The program includes lots with tents and some with trailers. He says he is constantly looking for options to offer more shelters.
We acknowledge some of them are precariously perched, and that's why we're working aggressively on things like Kettner and Vine, H-Barracks, to build more. But when things like Golden Hall are closing, well, we've expanded our safe sleeping sites, right? When some of these others are going down, we're finding new opportunities.
H-Barracks is a proposed safe sleeping site. Yesterday, the city issued a request for proposals for an operator to run it. Gloria has also proposed a 1,000-bed shelter at Kettner and Vine. We are just 12 days away from the presidential election. Democratic Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs joins Public Matters investigative reporter Amita Sharma to talk about that race and whether a ceasefire between Hamas and Israel is in the cards. She begins with what she's hearing from constituents about the presidential election.
Constituents are anxious about the election, especially for many of us for whom reproductive rights is deeply personal. There's really a sense of foreboding that this could decide whether or not we have rights, even in a state like California, because a federal abortion ban really could override all of our protections here in California. And a lot of what I'm hearing is young people really understanding the stakes of this election and really understanding that it's important to make their voice heard because their rights really are on the line.
How precarious is democracy in the United States right now?
We're really at an important moment. And what happens over the next 30 or so days could really be determinative in how our country moves forward. And one of the most important things will be making sure that all of us make our voices heard and that we all understand we have agency and that there are things we can do to make sure that we preserve our democracy. And a big part of that is voting in this upcoming election.
You were a freshly sworn in Congresswoman on January 6, 2021. You were at the Capitol building. What was that day like for you?
I was in the gallery overlooking the House floor, and I just remember when the Capitol Police came out and said, you know, there's tear gas in the rotunda, take out the gas masks from under your seats. I didn't even know there were gas masks under our seats. Eventually, we were hiding under the seats. It was my fourth day. I was literally still introducing myself to my colleagues. We could hear in the wall behind us the crowd sort of rushing in, the mob. And I later learned it was only 30 seconds from when I was pulled across the hallway to when the insurrectionists got there. And I will say, in all of my time and experience working around the world in conflict situations, this is the closest I ever felt to feeling like this might be the end.
Do you anticipate similar violence this time around?
One of the things I'm incredibly concerned about is the role of the House, because we know that Mike Johnson, the current Speaker of the House, the New York Times called him the architect of the effort to overturn the election in 2020. And so I'm very concerned if we don't win back the House this election, what might happen with Mike Johnson at the helm and what he might do to try and install Donald Trump even against the will of the people.
Turning our attention to foreign policy briefly, you sit on the House Foreign Relations Committee. What are the prospects for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas at this point?
I do think we have a window of opportunity here, and I think it's time. It's time. Israel has achieved any sort of military objectives it said it wants to achieve, and it's time to have a deal to get humanitarian assistance into Gaza to end the fighting and to bring the hostages home.
You skipped Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's joint address to Congress back in June, citing the Palestinian death toll of around 39,000 at the time. I think it's about 42,000 now. And you said that Israel's military response to the October 7th attack by Hamas had not been proportional, strategic, or effective, and that you could not, therefore, in good conscience, attend the speech. You faced accusations from members of the Jewish community that you were not sufficiently pro-Israel. How did that criticism land with you?
So I'm Jewish. I have close family who lives in Israel, my aunt, uncle, and cousin. It always hurts when, especially people in your own community, question your motives or, you know, don't agree with you. Everyone's not going to agree with me all the time, but I still feel very strongly that the way Netanyahu has led Israel is not actually making Israel any safer. And what will make Israel safer is finding a path to get a two-state solution so that Palestinians have autonomy and dignity. And in this case, that means making sure that Palestinians have a state where they get a say in their future.
Congresswoman Jacobs, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Congresswoman Jacobs' grandfather is Irwin Jacobs, who is a supporter of KPBS and Public Matters. In our next Why It Matters segment, we look at something you'll definitely see on your ballot. Our Public Matters partner, Scott Lewis, explains.
The word bond is all over the ballots of San Diegans this year. In San Diego, voters will have to decide on 7 different school bonds. If they approve them, districts will borrow billions of dollars and then raise property taxes to pay them off. Now, what the heck does that even mean? It means that your property taxes will go up by a certain amount depending on how much the county values your property. If you own a home that the county values at $100,000, then you would pay $30 more per year if Measure RR passes. School districts spend most of their money on teachers and administrators, but school bonds cannot be used to pay teachers more. They can only be used to build and repair things. And that's why builders and labor unions for workers that build things like them so much. I'm Scott Lewis, and that's Why It Matters.
You still have time to take advantage of Kids Free San Diego 2024. Throughout this month, kids 12 and under receive free admission with a paid adult to more than 50 of the county's museums, historic sites, aquariums, gardens, and more. Many are even free for the whole family. For more on Kids Free San Diego, go to sandiegomuseumcouncil.org. That's it for the podcast today. As always, you can find more San Diego news online at kpbs.org. Join us again tomorrow for the day's top stories. I'm Debbie Cruz. Thanks for listening, and have a great Thursday.